Hey, you, is your league rocking that same tired fantasy trophy they gave out to millennials like Grandma's Butterscotch? Trophy Smack destroys the competition! Finally, there is a unique and customizable fantasy sports trophy to represent your hard-earned victory. With Trophy Smack Swap Top, you have the ability to change the trophy top every year. The league winner keeps their topper and plaque to remind them of what it takes to be number one. We also sell rings, championship belts, and gift cards. Still not sold on Trophy Smack? Take a real customer's word for it.
It's clearly the best trophy on the planet. I bought the Trump topper and wow, doesn't that topper look like a winner?
Oh, I almost forgot. Last year in my fantasy league with UPS, I won a bet for free lifetime shipping. So, you're welcome for that. Take your fantasy smack talk to the next level. Visit TrophySmack.com to buy your trophy today.
What's up and welcome to the Dynasty Happy Hour with your hosts, Doug Eddy, Tim Keller, and Tyler Gunther. Bring us all inside the huddle. Whether it's in season or off season, this is your spot for the best and in-depth Dynasty fantasy football advice. So let's not waste any more time and get right to it with Doug, Tim, and Tyler with another Dynasty Happy Hour.
Welcome back to the Dynasty Happy Hour podcast. Once again, I am Tim Keller. I am back as the host this week. Tyler's out again. Doug's out again. But guess who isn't out? It's Justin. He's back, sitting side saddle. We're going to hold this down for another week. So, Justin, how are you doing, sir?
Doing great, man. It's been a good weekend. We have a wildlife refuge near our house. And yesterday we went out and the kids and I went out and explored it and had a good time and caught a movie. And then today it's just been all relaxing. So it's been actually nice. One of those weekends where I feel recharged and Monday is not so daunting.
There you go. Mondays are always daunting in my book, but we have a fantastic guest on. He is a writer for the Dynasty Happy Hour. He is one of the co-hosts of the Devi Happy Hour. He is a founder to Coast to Coast Scouting. I want to say his name is Andrew Harbaugh at Mandrew NFL on Twitter. So Andrew, how are you, sir? And did I miss anything? I'm sure I did. You do like 15 different
jobs. I do too many things for you to, we don't have enough time to get into all of them. So that's what I always say. No, I'm doing really good. To feed off the wildlife aspect we were going with so far, I actually went to a local small zoo today and kind of thought it was kind of depressing and not really a good zoo. And then afterwards, I was like, oh, it got sued by the ASPCA a couple years ago. I was like, well, that makes sense then.
Ouch. Yeah, that's rough.
I was like, oh, well, that's why it's so bad.
Yeah, well, hopefully they've learned from whatever incident caused them to get sued and they start treating the animals better.
Right, sure. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't feel down when you go to a zoo. Like, no. You're down, like, oh, this is so cool. Like, these animals are given the chance to thrive in a place where they won't be poached. And then, yeah, no, that's pretty bad.
It makes me feel bad. Every, like, I'm near the Pittsburgh Zoo and the aquarium, and it's fantastic. And, but the one we went to today, I'd never been to, but I was just like, I felt weird giving them my money.
Did you feel like you were going somewhere where it was like some dude's private collection?
It's kinda, it was kind of like we bought a zoo, but not as elaborate or as well funded. Okay. And without Scarlett Johansson.
Oh. Yeah, she makes a big difference.
It's gonna come she up does.
I'd go to whatever zoo she was working at.
Exactly.
So, guys, before we get into this week's topic, I want to thank our sponsors. The first sponsor I want to thank is TrophySmack.com. If you guys aren't already aware, you guys can go over to TrophySmack.com, check out the trophies, check out the championship belts, and check out the championship rings. Now, if you use the code DHHRING when you purchase a trophy or a belt, you get one of those fantastic-looking championship rings thrown in your order for free. So go check those rings out, fall in love with one of them, and then figure out, okay, which one of these awesome trophies do I have to buy in order to get that ring I love? Also, big shout out to the Sit and Start app, Sit or Start app, I apologize. They have been with us from the beginning. The Sit or Start app is absolutely awesome in season. It helps you set your lineups and even out of season, they have the news feed to keep you up on the latest and greatest with all of your favorite players to help you stay on top of all of your leagues. You can check them out on iTunes or the Google Play Store. And then lastly, the Ultimate Draft Kit, by the Fantasy Footballers. They are one of the biggest redraft podcasts and websites on the planet. They do a fantastic job. We promoted with them last year, and the draft kit was absolutely awesome. A lot of great feedback on it. It's a whole different mindset between redraft and dynasty. So maybe you focus all your energies into dynasty and you don't spend all those hours getting yourself prepared for the redraft. Well, guess what? The Ballers have already done it. Go buy the Ultimate Draft Kit. The link's in our bio on this episode. Go click it. It'll take you right to it. You can purchase it there. So thank you to the Fantasy Footballers for helping us out here. So guys, we want to talk a little Devy. That's obviously, Andrew, this is your, this is your forte. This is your bread and butter. This is where you live. So let's just kind of talk about how you got into the Devy landscape. I mean, did you just jump right into Devy, or did you start off in a regular dynasty format and then kind of transfer into the Devy a little bit?
Well, that was, yeah, I'll be honest. I didn't get into dynasty, honestly, until I started writing for Dynasty Happy Hour. I'd always done just redraft and a few keeper leagues here and there, and didn't realize how fantastic this whole dynasty thing is. It's like playing franchise mode on Madden, but way more fun and way more interactive, essentially. Yeah. You can't hit reset though when you make a bad trade and someone gets hurt. So, but regardless, Herm Edwards has his own idea on the whole reset button as well. But as far as Devy goes, I had just always loved the draft, and then I had seen Dwight FF People's Champ talking about it a little bit, and the Devy Watch I later learned after writing about Devy and so on. But it was just kind of like one of those things where I love the draft so much, and I honestly love college football way more than I do the NFL. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. And then obviously we didn't really have much Devy content coming out, so I was like, oh, it's untapped water as well. So it's a win-win-win across the board.
There you go. There you go. Well, I'm glad you found a niche and glad you found a home with us. That's for sure. I want to say this is your 1 year anniversary with DHH. Is that right?
It is. It's also my wife and I's 4 year anniversary. So
okay. I told her, congratulations to everybody.
I know, right? And I told her I'd save her. She gets the only tweet today. I said tomorrow I'll do my Dynasty Happy Hour, to be fair.
There you go. You got to keep something special about the day for the wife. So right. You know what? You got your priorities in order. So I want to kind of talk about, we'll look at the 2020 class especially here, and we can maybe talk about 2021, 2022. We start getting a little sketchy beyond that, really.
Right.
But talk about some of these prospects, kind of talk about where they would go, and then talk about maybe some strategies from, playing in Devy leagues, making trades for or with Devy players, and how, the ups and downs of that. So let's just start at the quarterback position. So Justin, who are some of your quarterbacks in that 2020 class that really have your eye?
Well, in 2020, Justin Herbert's a guy that's been getting some hype lately. Yep. That's one of those guys where he'd actually kind of drop down in the value scale for a lot of people. And I don't know why. I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I mean, the 2020 class is stacked at quarterback. I mean, Tua Tagovailoa is going to be, he'll probably be the 101. We could see another class like we did with Luck and Winston, where we have a 101 and 102 that are just superb quarterbacks that wind up being hugely fantasy relevant. I'm excited to see more out of Jake Fromm with Georgia. This class is just, it's got a lot of talent at the quarterback position. I think this year wasn't quite as deep as next year will be. And then 2021 obviously is exciting as well.
All right, Justin, I agree with those three you named for sure. And you talked about Herbert's stock kind of going down. If you just look between the last 2 years, he went from a 67% completion percentage down to 59.4. But despite that, before he decided he was going to stay in school, go back to Oregon for another year,
right?
There were a lot of draft experts, draft Knicks, whatever it is, that were saying that he was probably the most well-rounded prospect of the group if he were to come out. So I absolutely love Justin Herbert. I think he's going to be a very quality NFL quarterback, but I do have to agree with you. the moment Tua took the field for Bama, there's just been this buzz about him, this electricity. People are just in awe of him. It seems like he can just snap his wrist and the ball is 60 yards down the field. I have a Jake Fromm has not done anything to make me go, oh my God, this kid's amazing. This kid's special. Right. But he also hasn't done anything to make me go, oh, he stinks. He's just been consistent and a winner. He's won at Georgia over and over again. He's consistent. He makes decent enough decisions. He completes a decent amount of his passes. And there's just something that tells me that Jake Fromm is going to be at least a quality NFL starter, which really is what you're looking for in the draft. You don't want to take a guy in the third round of a rookie draft and then just never get to see the field. You're taking somebody there to hopefully one day be able to plug in on a at worst case scenario on a bye week situation. So
yeah, and
you kind of mentioned about this class being light, and we kind of were discussing this a little bit beforehand. If you merged these two classes together, other than Kyler Murray, and Herbert's damn close, but I think there was a pretty big gap between Kyler and the rest of this class. Kyler, Daniel Jones, Kyler, Dwayne Haskins, Kyler, Drew Lock. It's a pretty big gap between all those for me. So Herbert keeps it pretty close with Kyler. I think a lot of people in the draft will think that Tua is on that same level. Personally, I take Fromm above Daniel Jones and Dwayne Haskins as well.
I would too, and I think the reason being is that I look at Haskins and Jones as replacement-level quarterbacks. In fantasy especially, they're going to be, in my opinion, the back-end quarterbacks. And so what you're hoping for is, like you said, a bye week. They're in situations that aren't great. The Redskins situation is easily classified as bad. The Giants situation, almost the same. I mean, without Saquon there, I mean, we're talking about it being a dumpster fire because of what they've done with their team. In the offseason. Same with Drew Lock. I mean, we're talking about guys that didn't get the team we wanted, didn't have the talent to be drafted as high as they should have been, or were overdrafted. I mean, Daniel Jones, we can all agree upon, was overdrafted. I don't think that we should call his 106 the same as, you know, what another 106 would be. I would say Jake Fromm would be ahead of those guys for me. I would expect that he goes in the same kind of range, that 106 to 115 range, where he might actually wind up on a team that's got a little bit more going for him. You know, maybe they had a bad year with an injury or traded into a pick like that, or just is a team that was in the playoffs that traded up to get a guy like that that might fall a little bit. I mean, it happens every year where skill position players that are possible generational talents or whatever push back quarterbacks, as they should. You know, there's guys that make more impact on the field than a guy that's got question marks at quarterback. I mean, there's obviously, we can get into the specifics on how important quarterback is to the NFL, and it is absolutely, but whenever you start to question whether or not the quarterback's worth it, you know, you should probably take the slam dunk defensive end or offensive lineman and build that way. So, I mean, obviously we were all screaming that with the Giants. Like none of it made sense. Like there's developmental guys and they should go later. But there's guys like Fromm who, I don't know. It just really depends on how they do this year too. I know that that's the most recent year is typically the most important year for indicating what a player is going to do moving forward and who they really are.
That and especially at quarterback position, I look for statistical growth for the quarterbacks. I look at, you know, the yardage, the completion percentage. I'd like them to stick around a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio, if not higher.
Right.
But the quarterback position's a little bit different for me in Devy. Again, we kind of hit on this a little bit before we started recording that when it comes to the other skill positions, it's such a crapshoot. And not that quarterback isn't, but you know when a very talented quarterback's coming out, they have a very high likelihood of being drafted in the first 20 picks of an NFL draft.
Right.
Just based off the positional value here of running backs, wide receivers, things like that. they will just fall down the draft because the NFL teams understand where the value is in certain positions. So the same thing in Devy for me. If I drafted, I don't know. Let's say I had the 106 in a rookie draft this year, and somebody was offering me one of next year's running backs, Jonathan Taylor, let's say. I think Jonathan Taylor is going to be a very good NFL prospect, a very good athlete candidate to be a successful running back in the NFL. There's just a whole lot that has to happen before he even sees an NFL field, where I'm going to take the value. Let's say I was going to draft a running back in that position this year. I'd rather have the position now versus like the quarterback. If I was taking Dwayne Haskins this year and somebody offers me Justin Herbert, absolutely, I'll take Justin Herbert over Dwayne Haskins right now, because I fully expect Justin Herbert will be a top 10 pick in next year's NFL draft, barring any sort of major injury. And his career is going to be just as long, if not longer, than Dwayne Haskins. So in the end, I feel I'm going to end up making out. And a team will invest that draft capital in him. So I don't have anything necessarily holding me back. There's a lot of ups and downs, ebbs and flows, where you don't know where the running backs and wide receivers and tight ends are going to go. And if they don't get that draft capital that most players need in order to just kind of demand the field right away in their careers, you might not see a return on your investment for years to come.
Yeah, no, that's the one thing with Devy, and we talked about it actually this past week with Commission. Dwight is Commission myself for more, what are you doing for me now sort of thing. It's like the NFL. You want to get the production now. You want to get the results now. You want to get the points now, especially if you're in fantasy. Mm-hmm. Unless you're on a team where, in some cases, where you're loaded and you can sit on a Trevor Lawrence who may be 3 years out. I could see him, honestly, the type of kid he is, being like, you know what, I'm going to stay for my senior year. And then plus two, you got to factor in the potential lockout in 2021. Yep. And that's just the quarterback position for Lawrence looking ahead. And then you got names like Spencer Rattler coming into at Oklahoma, who's the other big guy that everyone's talking about, and DJU, who's behind Trevor Lawrence, going further to 2022. And as far as, like you were talking about with Herbert, he's probably going to end up somewhere like a Miami if Josh Rosen doesn't pan out this year,
yeah,
like a Cincinnati. And then I think a dark horse, too, to potentially get somebody, I think could be like a Detroit. I could see them doing a complete overhaul with Matt Patricia being gone, Quinn the GM being gone, then just being like, look, we're going to scrap this whole thing, especially if Matthew Stafford's already having some back issues. I know they said they were tiny fractures and he's looking better now, but still, you kind of saw that happen with Romo and it really kind of doomed him in. And I think if you're Detroit in this quarterback class coming up, if you got somebody sitting there on the board and you're picking in the top 10 again, something bad had to have gone with Stafford and the whole team. Mm-hmm. So no, that's what you're talking about. Like sitting as far as, especially with the quarterbacks go, like I have Lawrence in one Devy league and I gave up the farm and a half for him. And I also have Tua in that league, but I've also got Matt Ryan and, or not Matt Ryan. I've got Sam Darnold and Aaron Rodgers. Okay. So I have the luxury where I've got two solidified starters to where I don't have to worry about it. For
you're not biting your nails like, hey, you guys need to get the hell up here.
So exactly. Go ahead,
Andrew. Yeah, Andrew had a bit of a computer mishap, had to, you know, have that thing update just as we started recording. So it's good to have him back. But Justin and I kind of highlighted our top couple quarterbacks, and we're just talking about 2020 essentially. What are some of your top quarterbacks for next year's class?
Yeah, I mean, I'll do my top five. And number one for me is right now Tua. He on my grading scale is 1 point ahead of Herbert, who's number two. Spoiler there. I think what I like with Tua is how Jonah Williams was a great offensive lineman at Alabama last year, but I think the rest of the offensive line was very questionable because there's so many times I'm watching Tua, and that kid has the guts to just stand in the pocket, get walloped, and they're hitting him in the gut every time. I don't know how he doesn't play with broken ribs every week. Gets walloped every time, but he still finds Smith, Ruggs, and Judy down the field with pinpoint accuracy. Mm-hmm. And I also like his mobility and his ability to throw on the run as well. last year against LSU when he had that knee injury, he still broke off, I think it was like a 30, 40 yard touchdown run, which was just incredible to me. And it shows the grit this kid has. Yeah. And then two with Herbert, I've listened to you guys talk about him, so I won't go too far with him. I will say Herbert's one elite thing with him is keeping his eyes down the field and being able to find his receivers. Now, I think Dylan Mitchell being gone is going to hurt a little bit for him, but him getting Penn State transfer Juwan Johnson, who I like a lot as well, and I had him as preseason last year, top 15 receiver, I think Juwan Johnson's going to help Herbert a lot, and I think Herbert's going to help Johnson. And then going to number three, Jake Fromm. I know a lot of people are kind of – you either love Jake Fromm or you hate Jake Fromm. I keep joking that he's the Tony Romo of college football at this point. As far as his traits, his thing is he's a great game manager. So fantasy-wise, that's not what you want to necessarily see. But at the same time, you get him in the right offense, the right system. He has the mindset and the mechanics and the talent to develop into a very reliable, steady option as far as fantasy goes.
That's 100% what I said when you were off. He hasn't done anything that makes me go, this kid's absolutely special, but he hasn't ever done anything that makes me go, oh my God, this guy's a bum. And he's just been steady. And I think he can turn into that in the NFL.
Right. Yeah, no, that's the thing. I do like Fromm a lot. And I think he benefits a lot from the stable of running backs they have at Georgia. Yes. What I'm really interested to see is, I can't remember his name, that I was just talking to Thor about him yesterday, Thor Nystrom, the transfer from Cal that's at Georgia this year, because now they just dismissed their last leading receiver they had left. They're completely just gone for receivers. They've lost Riley Ridley. They lost Mecole Hardman. And then the third leading receiver behind them, he just got dismissed for his domestic violence issues.
Oh, yeah.
So they have nothing as far as receivers goes off of what happened or who they had last year. So I'm interested to see what Fromm can do with that, which I also think will speak to a lot as far as his NFL projections goes, because he may not go to a team where he's going to have something like Baker Mayfield has now with Jarvis Landry, Callaway, Njoku, and that guy named OBJ. Yeah. And then to round out my four and five, I've got KJ Costello from Stanford. He's another one of those kind of game manager, Jake Fromm types. He flashes a little bit more than Fromm does, but he still, I think, has a lot of growing to do. He's someone who returned for his senior year, and I think that was the right choice there. Yeah. And then rounding out five, I've got Texas Tebow, Sam Ellinger. I know freshman year, he was too fantastic as far as a passer. And last year, in the first half of the season, it was pretty spotty. But he needs to think pass first instead of run first. But he really is the Texas Tebow in that aspect, to where he just wants to run, drop out his shoulders, run over those guys instead of keeping his eyes down the field, where he's got talent like Colin Johnson, who's one of my favorite receivers in this next year's class as well. So that's my top five for now. It's the summer, so obviously change. But, I mean, quarterback talent-wise, just to speak to what 2019 was versus 2020, I would probably rather have Fromm, Herbert, and Tua over probably everybody except maybe Kyler over Fromm at this point. But I'd probably rather have Herbert and Tua over everybody in this class that just happened.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. The difference between the classes is going to be huge next year. That's for sure. We're going to see that. I actually have Jacob Eason, the Georgia transfer, as my fifth quarterback, currently Washington quarterback. But yeah, I agree with you on Costello there for Stanford. Again, another guy that I don't see any special trait about him, but I don't see anything that makes me completely scare off of him either.
Yeah, my thing with Eason is, and I was talking to somebody the other day about this, and I don't know if they want me to say what they were saying, but we were kind of talking about how Eason left Georgia for a reason. Mm-hmm. And my thing is, not everyone is sold on Fromm as a fantasy value, but everyone's expecting Jacob Eason to come into Washington and kind of just break the doors down to the Pac-12 and run the thing through Washington. And while the SEC, he played very, very well the time he was there before he got hurt, I still have questions, and I want to see how it looks with him having not played football for the year and then going into the system with Christian Peterson, who I think is a fantastic coach and is able to coach up quarterbacks. I mean, heck, he made Jake Browning look good there. So Jacob Eason's a big question mark for me. He's at six for me, though. But he has the potential to jump Ellinger and Costello if he produces the way everyone projects him to.
Okay. All right, let's move over to the running back position. So, Andrew, I'll go to you first. You gave us five quarterbacks. Why not five running backs?
Five running backs. I'll try not to talk too much, too, this time. It's just quarterbacks are my bread and butter as far as – and I love watching them. Number one, and I blame Dwight for this, FF People's Champ, again, my co-host on Devi Happy Hour. I've got Travis Etienne as my number one running back. Yeah. And he's really the one who pounds the door for him every single week, I feel like, as far as just Etienne. One of the things I love about him is, I talked about this on Coast to Coast Scouting, I said, everyone talks about the home run threat with Etienne. They talk about the pass catching. They talk about the breakaway speed. What my favorite thing with Etienne is, and he showed this more as a freshman than he did as a sophomore last year, is his ability to block is just phenomenal. Like, he'll just throw his whole body into everybody, and he doesn't have the biggest frame, but he's growing. He's added a little bit of weight from freshman to sophomore year. I think junior year we're really going to see him take the next jump, and I think he can be a Heisman candidate despite Trevor Lawrence getting all the love there.
I got to interject something. Okay. So we keep talking about Dwight, and I want to say that I love the fact that you and Dwight are so into this, because Dwight and I started Dynasty at the same time in the same league. And then he followed me getting into the analysis side and the Devi, and just dove in like you wouldn't believe. Fast forward to this past year, I'd had Etienne. I drafted him in our league together. I guess it was his freshman year. And this year, he offers me I had to have been, in my mind, one of those trades where I had to take it, because it worked so well for both of us and where we're at, where I'm in the spot that I need to compete now. And I hated it because I had to trade Travis Etienne away.
I'm sure he loved it.
Yes, he did. And to be fair, he gave up some heavy production, but he had other reasons. It really made the most sense for both of our teams. I can't stress that enough. But it kills me because I'd also traded him Trevor Lawrence in another trade. It was either in that trade or another trade separately. Just he's rebuilding and I'm in a win now mode. And it kills me because he's got like five of the Devi players I drafted on his team now. And so there's a part of me that's like, if I don't win a damn championship this year or this year or next year, it's going to cost me. And it'll be at his hand, I'm sure. Because he's going to have a team based on players like that, and of course the others that he drafted himself that are going to come out. But I completely agree with you. I think Etienne's a game changer. He's got some proving it to do, but I think that whole Clemson team is just going to keep on being explosive, and we're going to wind up talking about several Clemson players, I'm sure. But go ahead, keep on going. We want you to talk. You're the guy that's just like heavy into this. And you've got the Devi Happy Hour, so why they need to listen.
Clemson's a video game at this point, because you got Lawrence quarterback, you got Etienne at running back, you've got Justin Ross and T. Higgins, who doesn't get talked about enough. You've got Rodgers as well for Clemson that also doesn't get talked about enough. So it's just as far as like they're kind of on paper what Cleveland is expected to be this year, but they're the real deal already. Like
we've actually seen these people play together.
Right. Exactly. And it's just, I mean, and there's no other word for it. What they did to Alabama last year, they spanked them like they stole something. It was just the most dominant performance I've ever seen by Trevor Lawrence and everyone, and Justin Ross coming out party. Back to 2020 running backs, though, because I'm sure we could talk about Clemson until we're blue in the face. Right behind Etienne, I've got Tyler's guy, DeAndre Swift.
Perfect.
He actually has the same grade as Etienne for me. I like Etienne a little bit more. Swift, I mean, all I have to say is a Georgia running back, and I feel like that kind of just sums up everything, and we can move on to the next one.
Not only a Georgia running back, but a Georgia running back as a freshman that was seeing the field when they had guys by the name of Sony Michel and Nick Chubb there. He was forcing his way on the field back then.
And he's the best pass catcher out of the three of them lumped together as well.
Yes.
Which for us as fantasy players is what in PPR you care about the most. For anybody that still plays standard, I feel bad for you. But regardless, J.K. Dobbins, I've got at number three. Last year, he didn't get as much, like, Ohio State really put everything on Dwayne Haskins. And then for running the ball, they kind of gave it all to Mike Weber, which is kind of weird because all we heard about J.K. Dobbins as a freshman was he's going to be this Ezekiel Elliott type back. And he lit up Virginia Tech, I think, for like 250 yards his first game. And everyone's like, oh, my gosh, this is what everyone thought it was going to be. And then from there, kind of died down. And I liked Mike Weber as a prospect and as a college player, so I get it. But I think with Fields coming in, I think him and Dobbins are just going to be monsters for the Big Ten. I think Ohio State's going to run away with it this year. It'll be interesting to see what Minnesota and Northwestern, and I don't really think Wisconsin, as much as Dan Kiefer's going to kill me for saying it, is going to play much in the West. But I think Northwestern and Minnesota are going to be their biggest threats. But at the end of the day, Dobbins, to me, I said this a couple weeks ago, he reminds me of Le'Veon Bell to where he waits for the play to develop, and then he just shoots the gap. And as far as his pass-catching ability, he's real patient with his routes, and he kind of finds where the defense is and kind of turns upfield. I did have Connor Rogers reply to that, though, and he thought he saw more of a Doug Martin in J.K. Dobbins, which if you got a healthy Doug Martin and a head-on-his-shoulders Doug Martin, we saw what he was as a fantasy asset. So either way, I think J.K. Dobbins projects very, very well. And then my guy that I – what Travis Etienne is to Dwight, Keyshawn Vaughn is to me – as far as this year goes, I'm a giant Florida fan. I don't even try to hide it. But what I when I watched Vanderbilt and Florida this past year, I was like, Vanderbilt's just supposed to be a defensive school. Derek Mason has a great defense there. Apart from them giving up 49 points to Alabama, they have a very sneaky good offense, especially this year with Riley Neal, their quarterback, transferring in from Ball State. Keyshawn Vaughn at running back, Jared Pinkney, a tight end, who's I think a top five tight end in this upcoming class. But as far as Keyshawn Vaughn goes, he doesn't have the pass catching stats that a DeAndre Swift or a Josh Jacobs did last year to compare. But I think as far as pure running ability, I think he might be up there with like a Jonathan Taylor type in this class. So, and he's one where once he kind of gets more into that offense, and I think Neal's going to be a better quarterback than Shermer was. I almost said Sherman, not Mike Sherman, Pat Shermer. Pat Shermer's kid. I think he's going to be a better quarterback for Vanderbilt, and I think they're going to be a sneaky team in the SEC this year as well.
Yeah, what do you have, like 7.9 yards per carry last year?
Oh, it was insane. It was, yeah. I mean, it was in the Darrell Henderson area. Darrell Henderson had 8.9.
And that's playing at big schools.
Yeah, yeah, and it's the SEC, so it's nothing against Darrell Henderson, but, I mean, I don't think Darrell Henderson runs for 8.9 in the SEC.
You're going against, you know, players where about 50% of them will play in the NFL at some point.
Yeah, you've got the linebacking corps at Florida, Alabama, and you've got the defensive line at Auburn. You've got the LSU defense as a whole.
Yeah, the cornerbacks, the safeties, definitely.
Everybody. So that's I mean, SEC is cream of the crop. I mean, there's as far as defenses go. So whenever a player produces against them, that means something to me. That's also part of my Deebo Samuel love looking back on this past year.
Yeah, just to kind of talk about him a little bit more, I have him on one of my lists. He's a guy that I think after this past season, he had, I must say, a little over 1,200 yards. He really started to pop up on my radar. I was like, man, this kid's doing that in the SEC at Vanderbilt. Like you said, Vanderbilt's not known as an offensive school. So as the season was going along, I just kept tracking him and I'm like, man, this kid's actually producing every week. It's like, you know, it wasn't like a couple big fluke games, you know, just got him on some highlight reels. It's, you know, this kid's producing at a high level over and over and over again. And it was very interesting for me, at least, to be like, wow, I'm actually paying attention to Vanderbilt football here.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. Like, he had a stretch last year where 4 out of 6 games, he had at least 120 yards. Mm-hmm. One of them was against Tennessee State, so you can take that for what it's worth. But the other teams in that stretch, Arkansas, Missouri, Mississippi, and then Baylor in the bowl game. If you want to see a game to where what Keyshawn Vaughn can be as far as top-notch, best game possible he could have, and it's on YouTube for the cut-ups that people do, he had 13 carries against Baylor and had 243 yards. That's 18.7 yards per carry.
Yeah,
again, it's more. Baylor. It's a Big 12 defense. Tackling is optional in the Big 12. But as far as just breakout games, it started with Florida, and it just the top of the mountain was Baylor. So I'm really excited for him this year. And he's on Jim Nagy's Senior Bowl watch list. And that's the other thing, too, with him. He's one of the rare senior running backs. So he's someone who, once he gets into the process, like the Senior Bowl, he goes down to Mobile. He has a chance to excel down there and just kind of go from there. Yeah. Rounding out my five before everybody gets mad at me in Wisconsin, I got Jonathan Taylor at five. My biggest thing with Jonathan Taylor, and I talked about it last year with some running backs like Miles Gaskin, the carries is something that really concerns me with running backs. I want to have as much tread on the tire if you're going to be on my fantasy team, because you might hold on to a guy for 2-3 years, but say you get someone where, you know what, he's going to be a top option. I want to hold on to him as long as I can. And you don't know, and you saw kind of, we're seeing it now with Todd Gurley. While he had the ACL injury, Taylor, thank God, knock on wood, another time Kiefer's going to kill me, had not had any injuries like that. But a bit concerning for me is just how many carries Jonathan Taylor has.
Yeah.
And then also, too, the other thing everyone always talks about is the fumbles. I mean, there's a game, I can't remember who I was watching. I think it was him against Iowa. He didn't even get touched, and the ball comes flying out. And I was like, what are we doing here? I mean, and Adrian Peterson has a fumbling problem, too, and he's had an okay career. And then, too, just while I was saying that, too, I pulled up Jonathan Taylor's carries. In 2 years at Iowa, he has 622 touches. So,
yeah.
And that's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of running backs that come into the league that don't even have that. Josh Jacobs had, I think, like 150 in his career last year coming out. Yeah, so,
well, I think Josh Jacobs is a little bit of a outlier with his injury,
right,
the way that things worked for him. I hear what you're saying on the carries. There are several examples of guys that that came out and had too many carries. And I think that what really hurts them is that they don't have the draft capital that you really are looking for with a running back if they have too many carries. It really just depends, you know, because the right running back on the right team, even with too many carries, if you can get 2-3 years of solid production out of them before they break down, I mean, that's really all I'm looking for out of a running back in the first place. I think that what you mentioned about the fumbles, that might prove to be a bigger issue is right, getting on the field, because they're every down, every possession counts. And so these coaches really, really care about keeping that possession. And so if it continues to be a problem, you know, those are the kind of guys that are on a really short leash, especially with teams that don't put up with it. I mean, there's some of the teams that are like, oh, you know what, you're a rookie, is early in the game. They might look back on it and say, hey, really, okay, that's a problem. But I don't know. I'm kind of surprised that you had Keyshawn Vaughn so high. I'm looking, and most people don't have him even in their top 15. And so
that's what, when he brought Keyshawn Vaughn up, I that's what I was saying is I have him on my list. And I have him at 6 on mine. He made Andrew's top 5, obviously, but I love it, because this is a kid that I'm not seeing in a ton of other places this high. And I'm, you know, maybe I need to dig in more, because Andrew's got him a little bit higher than me. But yeah, I like finding those guys and, you know, getting my hooks into them earlier than the rest of the, you know, the rest of the people out there.
And the wonderful thing about Devy is that if you do feel that way about a guy, and especially if he's not highly rated by other teams, you can go out and get him. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
Because unless the other person is as high on him as you are, there's going to be buying opportunities, especially over the course of a few years, you know, in college, if a guy does stay as long as he did, there's going to be a buy low spot. And like I said, he's not that high for anybody. So if you feel that strongly, and if you listeners take it upon yourself to watch some more of Keyshawn Vaughn and feel that Andrew's right, this is the time to buy before the season, because if he does explode, you know, that's going to be, everybody that we're talking about right now will be on the radar come November. And that's whenever, you know, Dynasty starts to die down and people start to dive into these rookies, and they're like, all right, my team sucks, I'm out of the playoffs, let's see who's coming next. And then the buy low is gone on most everybody until the draft. And then once you've got draft capital, you find out who's right and who's wrong. And so We kind of talked about ranking these guys with the 2019 class. And I think the most difficult part to do that is comparing one class to the next, where you've got draft capital and team and you have nothing except for production in college. And there's so much projection there. The beautiful thing about that is there's this huge window to be able to buy in a Devy league, because you can say, all right, this guy is on a team now and he's going to produce for you. I want this guy that's a maybe better prospect, but hey, I've got to wait a year, 2 years, and there's always the potential he gets hurt, always the potential that, you know, he doesn't pan out, because we don't know what we don't know. So that's the wonderful part about Devy, is you can bet on your analysis, you can bet on yourself to be right and put together a team you want exactly how you like it. I don't know if we should hammer on, you know, any more of the running backs. He really hit them hard. I want to say, I really like Eno Benjamin,
mm-hmm.
and I am excited to see what he can do this year. With N'Keal Harry leaving, that kind of is going to open up some targets for him. I know that as a running back, he's one of the ones that's had some good receptions as well. I'm excited to see what that Arizona State offense does, just because they've been pretty electric the past few years.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see if they go more towards a running focused team. Obviously, though, they will use Eno in the passing game as well. But you brought up buy low windows. I just wanted to spit this name out here. Najee Harris. He came into Alabama as a big time recruit early on in his time in Alabama. He did flash some athleticism, but obviously, you know, just like Georgia, Alabama gets studs in there. So mm-hmm. Damian Harris held him off, both Scarborough this last year. Harris again, along with Jacobs. And we know that, you know, what happened with both of those boys, they're playing in the NFL this year. So Najee hasn't really produced like a lot of people thought he was going to coming into Bama as a big time recruit. So owners of Najee may be down on him. You could probably buy him in your Devy leagues at maybe not a super discounted rate, but a lot less than you're going to pay in another 10 months. Well, not even 10 months now, 6 months. If he's the, you know, the lead guy for that Alabama offense, his stock's going to go up. So just want to spit that name out there. So let's go over to the wide receiver position. Andrew, again, top five. Give us your top five wide receivers in the 2020 class.
Yeah, no, I actually just finished up my receivers last night. Taking advantage of that, my wife being in Hawaii again. My number one player, and I talked about him with Coast to Coast Scouting, and I've tweeted this out. My number one player in this 2020 class, I'm covering all positions because I've got some other writing going on other places, and I've been grading players for 3 years. My top player I've ever seen is Quentin Nelson. Right behind him is Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy, to me, is just – I think he's a can't miss. I think he's a combination of so many different receiving talents. I said the other day, and I thought of Kyle Krabs drinking to these crazy comps as I said him, but he can stop on a dime like Chad Johnson. He'll have possession across the middle like Andre Johnson. He's not afraid to go across the middle, and he can get up like Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, what better receiving aspects and talents and traits do you want than that? And the thing is, like, he's always posting, and you can post workout videos, but he's constantly working. I've never heard like or read anything bad about a coach saying anything about his work ethic. And Alabama's pretty open-ended as far as their talent goes. Nick Saban doesn't hold his tongue. That's the Belichick in him. As far as just top-notch 101 in Devy, 101 next year when I expect him to come out. We don't know because he is a junior. I think he's the best prospect next year, hands down. He could come in, be a team's number one from day one. And I think first-year receivers always have a little bit of a learning curve. But I could see him jumping into a top 12 fantasy receiver in his second year in the right spot. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that goes into that. Obviously, if you're going to be playing with a quarterback, like if Andy Dalton somehow has a job in 2021 or Lamar Jackson if he goes to Baltimore – if he develops into a receiver and not a wide receiver, it's one of those things where if he goes to like a good pass oriented team with a good quarterback there, the sky's the limit with Jerry Jeudy. I can't give a more glowing endorsement for him. And then
Who's your number two?
I was going to say number two, I've got LaVisca Chenault. I love the player Laviska Shenault. I also love the person Laviska Shenault. Fun fact with him is you always see when you're watching him, his dreads stick out of his helmet and literally to your eyes. And the backstory with those is he wears them. He grew them out because his dad died changing a tire on the side of the highway when he was a kid. He was just nine. Oh, so man. Every time I see the dreads, I think of his dad, and that's what motivates him. And I've read and watched him talk about it. So something with Shenault, though, his big thing is his hands. I mean, he literally, it's like he has stick'em. He has the best hands, I think, in this class. Judy's the most complete receiver, but Shenault is one of those guys where you throw the ball anywhere in his area, he's going to come down with it.
Yep. Yeah, he's amazing that way. Like,
yeah, and I shared a clip a couple months ago when he was playing, or Colorado's playing Nebraska. Montez, to his credit, drops a dime in between these three defenders, but it's a very, very tight window. And Shenault has to dive out and catches it with just his fingertips, brings it in, and it just amazing for him. I love his stretch talent and his hands. Number three, I got the best receiver on Oklahoma from last year and this year, CeeDee Lamb.
CeeDee Lamb.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
CeeDee Lamb, I think, is just – he's going to be one of those home run threats. And I think he's what everyone's expecting Marquise Brown to be in the NFL, I think, is what CeeDee Lamb's going to be because he's got the bigger frame. He doesn't have the foot issues. And I think with him, obviously he's not going to – I don't see Baltimore drafting two Oklahoma receivers back-to-back, God forbid. But as far as landing spots for him, if he gets to the right spot again, he's just like Judy. I think he can overcome most places. But with him, he's the home run threat in this class. Mm-hmm. He just needs – he could be a guy where he has two catches in a game, 90 yards, two touchdowns. And like, you'd be totally okay with that. Number four, I've got T. Higgins, the forgotten receiver at Clemson, through everybody else.
Yeah.
Justin Ross had that fantastic college football playoff, and everyone's still talking about him. But T. Higgins, to me, he was a Biletnikoff finalist last year. T. Higgins is 6'4", 200 pounds. He is an NFL-bodied receiver. And he's another one of those guys where he's not going to burn you down the field necessarily, but he kind of has the flexibility to play inside, outside, and he has great hands, doesn't use his body, catches the ball away from it, and his route running is really what separates him literally from defenders and from everybody else in this class. And then number five, I've got a couple people with the same grade here, but just getting the edge here as far as pure athletic ability and playmaking ability, I've got Tyler Johnson from Minnesota. A lot of people were surprised he didn't come out last year. He's going to be a senior this year. He's another one who I'm excited to see down at Mobile next year because I'm hoping he makes it down there. Tyler Johnson, if you watch him, he really was the star of that Minnesota offense, and PJ Fleck goes right through him. So I'm excited to see what he can do this year where the eyes are going to be on him. Defenses are going to be focused on him. What is he going to do when he gets that double coverage and all that focus? I think he's athletic enough and – has enough traits to overcome that, but it's still something we want to see as far as an evaluation process.
You know, nice. Not usually crazy when players stay through their senior season, but usually that means because they're older, but he's only going to be 21 when he gets drafted and he'll be 22 going into his rookie season. And I don't think that's a terrible age really. And the benefit is then he'll have that 4 years of college experience to come in and play. I'm really excited. I'm glad you mentioned Tyler Johnson because he was one of the guys I was really hoping really, really hard that he would come out this season, and he didn't. So I love your top five. I think we could talk this Debbie receiver class coming up for a while because there's
a lot of guys. I mean, Ohio State has three, I think, that are going to be drafted next year. And obviously, Ohio State, like Bama – Like all the big schools, but Ohio State and Bama especially, they get nothing but absolute studs. And I'm looking forward to seeing the likes of KJ Hill next year. Yes. I think he could be very Paris Campbell-esque. Obviously, we know that Ohio State tends to run the ball a little bit more than most other teams. They don't just throw it around the yard all day. But they got Austin Mack is there. And who's the other? Benjamin Victor. Victor. He's the big... the big body of the three of them. So I'm just kind of really interested to see what Ohio State does with that trio. They got two guys that are, I mean, none of them are tiny, but smaller in stature. Victor's like 6'3", 6'4".
He's listed at 6'4", 200 for them. And then KJ Hill's 6 foot. 198.
Okay. Yeah, he'll I like his speed. I like his big play abilities. I think they're really going to use him in that Paris Campbell role. I'm interested, and I fully believe that all three of these kids are going to show up at the combine next year and just light it up, because that's what Ohio State players do.
And that's the crazy part too, is not only can all three of them show up at the combine, but Victor and Hill can show up down in Mobile. So they're really going to be another one of those guys to take advantage of this full process, to where they go down and light it up in Mobile in practice. It's going to be
a lot and of fun. They're probably going to be playing against cornerbacks that aren't on that same athletic level, and they're probably going to have very nice weeks down there. So that'll start that process off real nice for them. What about Ruggs, the other Alabama big name receiver?
Oh, Henry Ruggs. Yeah, no,
he's got some potential.
Yes.
That's the big thing on him.
Yeah, Ruggs for me, I think with him is he's definitely going to step up when – I don't know if he'll come out next year. I could see him maybe staying just because –
I was going to say, I think he'll let Judy have his light and then say, watch me be the guy. And I think Ruggs is a very good receiver. But you're talking about one of the Bama's all-time greatest receivers. Judy has the ability to just be electric at any moment, and Ruggs is very good in his own right. But playing beside somebody like that, you just kind of don't get the shine you probably deserve.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing with Ruggs is I think if he were at any other college, he would be seen as this top five can't miss prospect. But yeah, no, so many times when I'm watching Jerry Judy, while Jerry Judy doesn't always necessarily get the ball, and I was just watching his route running, the ball always finds Henry Ruggs. Like, that's who Tua looks whenever the play goes to crap. That's who Tua looks for downfield is more often than not, Henry Ruggs. That's his security blanket. So that also speaks to how much Tua trusts him and his talent as far as a receiver and being there when he needs to be, which in the NFL – we see so many receivers that are security blankets for their quarterbacks, to where they're going to get the ball at least targeted 10, 15 times a game, because you know that pocket's going to break down. You know the play's going to break down. They're going to be looking for somebody to bail them out. Henry Ruggs is that type of guy for Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And then another kid I loved this year that came out was Deebo Samuel. And when I was watching his tape, I didn't know much about this kid until I started watching Deebo, but Brian Edwards down at South Carolina is just another kid that I want to pay more attention to this year. But I saw some things I liked on him, so I started to dig a little bit on him. I'm going to watch him as much as I can live this year. So,
yeah, I've got Brian Edwards in my top 10. He's at number 10, actually. So,
okay.
No, and he's somebody, when we were down in Mobile, I did get to talk to Deebo Samuel, and it was funny because the only time he talked about himself was when he was talking about going up DeAndre Baker at Georgia. The rest of the time he was talking about Brian Edwards and how he is such a great teammate. It's his best friend. They are roommates.
Oh, wow.
And he just kept saying, I'm going to tear up practice this year. He's like, next year, Brian's going to come down here and just tear it up more.
I believe it.
He's like, South Carolina wide receivers are going to dominate here the next 2 years. And that's what he kept saying. And that's what I fell in love with Deebo, because he got the nickname Deebo because he's a bully and he could talk trash. And he's just so confident. And then, like, you follow Brian Edwards on Twitter. He posts the video from Wolf of Wall Street saying, I'm not effing leaving. And he's, like, coming back and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And Deebo talked about how they had that video planned for weeks. And he just wanted – Brian Edwards wanted to take advantage, yada, yada, yada. And he said that part of him staying was he didn't want to take anything away from Deebo. They want to help each other. Yeah. So I'm really excited for Brian Edwards next year.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's move over to the tight ends. I mean,
we have to.
Definitely not top five.
I was going to say a couple names.
What really
stinks for these tight ends, there's really, I have one guy on my list, maybe two. But we're talking about, at least in my opinion, I at least liked so many of the tight ends that just came out in this year's class. And I loved about four of them. So we're talking one of my favorite tight end classes come out in a long time to
This is definitely, when you look at for fantasy quarterbacks last year, we got suffocated by running backs, you had Josh Jacobs and everybody else, you could really just throw a dart at the wall.
Yeah.
Receivers, you had people that had, like me, I had Debo one. People had Kelvin Harmon one. People had DK Metcalf one. And we saw what happened with receivers in the draft. It really just kind of made everybody panic, like draft day with Bo Callahan falling. Nobody knew what to do. And then you get to the tight ends. And like you said, we just got spoiled with riches with TJ Hockenson, Noah Fant, Irv Smith, just to name the top three. And then you got players like Foster Moreau, Dawson Knox, who are late round NFL picks,
but
are kind of like sneaky stashes when it comes to your rookie drafts, where you can get them in rounds 4 and 5, but you might get a starting tight end out of them. As far as 2020 goes, my top five, I won't name all five, but I mean, out of my top 10, I guess we'll do it this way. Only four of them are really pass catching tight ends. Everyone else is kind of blocking tight ends. And just the names real quick, Jacob Breland from Oregon. I talked about security blankets for Tua Tagovailoa. Justin Herbert's security blanket was Jacob Breland. When it came to the red zone and he was looking for somebody, Jacob Breland made athletic catches, not just like tight end catches, but kind of like catches you'd expect a receiver to make. Albert O, you're not going to get me butchering his name on the show, from Missouri.
See, I was actually going to ask you how to properly pronounce that last name, because I don't know.
I've heard it once, and I couldn't say it afterwards. And I went back and listened a couple times, and I can't do it. It'll be one of those things where when the draft rolls around, I'll have to listen to it some more.
Yeah,
I'm going to try it. I'm going to try Albert it.
Oki Wegabunum?
Albert, something like that.
Wegabunum. Wegabunum.
I think that was the closest double ball that I remember.
You know what? Andrew? You're right. It's Alberto.
Yeah. That's what I've been doing it for 2 years now, because a lot of people thought he was going to come out last year too.
Yeah.
And he surprised everyone by going back to Missouri. So, Alberto, when I was watching Drew Locke last year and I was trying to watch Emmanuel Hall and his spoons for hands, Albert O is who he went to literally all the time. That was Drew Locke's best bud, security blanket, top target. And that's kind of what, just to highlight a little bit for 2019 guys, that's why I love Noah Fant so much in Denver, is Joe Flacco loves tight ends and Drew Locke loves tight ends. So no matter who's the quarterback there, I think Noah Fant's going to produce.
I loved Noah Fant this year. What my concern with Albert is, because Drew's gone, if the dip in production, I think there's going to be an obvious dip. So scouts are going to have to really lean on the past 2 years of production with Drew Locke, and just kind of base their analysis off that. I think he's going to have another decent season at least. But if this guy comes in to the combine next year and there's people saying he's going to run like low 4.5s, if he does that, I think this guy is, I think he made a wise decision. I think he knew that this tight end class was going to be deeper and he was going to be in that mix, but why,
he's going to make himself a lot more money.
This year. Why possibly not perform at certain testings and interviews? Maybe just slightly less than some of the other people, and force yourself into the third round of a draft. If you show up next year, you're head and shoulders above everybody athletically. You don't do anything stupid in the interview process. You're probably landing in the first round. And like you said, you just made yourself a ton of extra cash.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, with his body, 6'5", 255. If he runs a 4.5, he's going to kind of have a TJ Hockenson type of rise.
Yeah.
Or a Noah Fant type of rise, where if he falls between picks, I don't think he'll be a top 10 pick, but he could go between 10 and the end of the first, potentially, depending on team needs and everything.
15 to 25 sounds about right.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be perfect for him. And there's going to be teams that are going to be picking there. Forecasting way ahead, you don't know where New England's going to pick. Probably one of the last two picks. They didn't really address tight end yet. Could you imagine Albert O with Tom Brady until he's 55?
So Albert O will retire before Tom does.
Exactly. And that's, everyone's going to retire before Tom does. But as far as tight ends go, Albert O. And then I kind of talked about a little bit earlier, Jared Pinkney from Vanderbilt. I finally got to watch some of his cutups that got added yesterday, and he's grading out as my tight end 3. I really, really like him as a pass catcher. Blocking's not the greatest, which is kind of a plus when you're looking at tight ends, because they can earn extra reps and be a 3-down tight end. Everyone talks about 3-down running backs, but they don't talk about 3-down tight ends. Because if you got a tight end who's only going to be in the passing scenarios, I just see if there's an audible called and it changes to a pass play, that's an extra snap and potential extra target for your guy. And then just rounding out the pass catcher, because after that, it's really
yeah. to make the same sound.
Grant Calcaterra from Oklahoma. He replaced Mark Andrews last year very, very well. Produced in the Big 12 championship with several big catches, and plus catches in tight windows and in coverage to where he got hit and he still held on to the ball. So those are the four I'm looking at: Alberto, Jared Pinkney, Jacob Breeland, and Grant Calcaterra. Those are really the only four tight ends at this point that have caught my attention.
What about O'Grady out of Arkansas?
I haven't gotten to watch.
Okay.
He's on my list, but it's a mercy.
He's had some decent production for Arkansas. So just a guy you might want to check out.
Yeah. And I've got him on here. So there's my tight ends. I'll be fair. I've got about 8 grades so far for summer wise. And I've got about 20 tight ends listed.
It's just a rough position to watch for next year's class.
It's so hard to project for Debbie. I mean, there's,
yeah.
And not to mention the fact that rookies take a while to produce in the first place. So, you know, you're taking a player years before they enter the NFL, hoping that they actually get drafted in a good spot and that they'll wind up producing. There's just so much more of a waiting game at tight end. And with as cheap as they are in most leagues, I mean, it just doesn't make sense unless you've got a slam dunk, you know, a guy that's came out and put 2 solid years together or something like that to really even take them in a Devy league. Because you've got guys even like Grant Calcaterra that you could think that are going to be the guy. But I can tell you this much. Austin Stogner is going to get a little bit of run, in my opinion, this year. And it could be just enough to pull eyes away from him a little bit. I don't know. We'll see. There's tight ends, just one of those ones where, like you said, there's only 4 of them that you can even point at and say, I kind of like these guys.
Yeah. Another guy that makes my short list is Colby Parkinson from Stanford.
I have him too.
Yeah. Yet his freshman year, and obviously freshman in college, you're not doing a ton, but this last year he did have 29 catches. JJ Arcega-Whiteside's gone. So just, we talked about KJ Costello, the quarterback there for Stanford. I think that Colby could turn into that kind of comfort blanket we were talking about earlier. Just that, KJ kind of is looking. He's got that clock running in his head. He realizes, okay, I have about another second before I should start feeling the defensive end, you know, smack me in the back here. He's going to look for that tight end, and Colby could definitely benefit this year.
He lost his big offense red zone target.
Yep.
JJ Arcega-Whiteside.
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing too with Colby is he's 240 weight wise, but he's 6'7" is what he's listed by Stanford. Yeah. So he's a perfect red zone target to kind of, he could be one of those guys where he could be your classic college tight end where he has 20 to 30 catches, but he could have double digit touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then I just something to had 7 okay. last year.
Exactly. Oh. Something to talk about too, as far as potentially limiting production and hampering development. We do have, you talked about Alberto losing Drew Lock. He gets Kelly Bryant in there. Mm-hmm. Kelly Bryant was real hot and cold as far as a passer at Clemson. Obviously Trevor Lawrence chased him out of South Carolina, which he probably would have chased 129 out of 130 quarterbacks in D1 out of their schools. But as far as he goes, he got Kelly Bryant coming in. So he's at least got an established, well-versed starter coming in. But then Jalen Hurts coming into Oklahoma, you don't know what he's going to do for receivers like CeeDee Lamb and tight ends like Calcaterra. So you've got 2 not the greatest passers, but well-established starters and leaders coming into schools where they might lean on running the ball more and they might not be passing as much. So looking back, like you said, the last year and the year before with Drew Lock, and then going back and looking at Kyler Murray for Calcaterra, maybe something you have to do.
Speaking of the Oklahoma quarterback position, didn't they just land the top quarterback in the recruiting class?
Brock Vandergriff.
There you go, Vandergriff. Yeah. Chances he actually starts as a freshman. I mean, I know they just got the transfer and all that, but
well, it's not even necessarily him. It's just you got Spencer Rattler too.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got
Dave Reloo,
Hurts, Rattler, and Vandergriff. And I think Vandergriff and Rattler, you're going to kind of have the same situation that Georgia just had play out, where you had Jake Fromm come in, make Jacob Eason transfer, then you had Justin Fields commit. And Justin Fields transferred. I don't see Rattler and Vandergriff kind of staying there the whole time.
Yeah,
and they can one of them's going to go. because they're both good players and they need to start out of school. It's just there's only one quarterback job at Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's always the chance that they decommit to that.
Yes.
Vandergrift decommits because Spencer Rattler is likely going to be the starter a year from now if he doesn't even eat into it this year. I mean, he didn't show up. He finished out school this year, so he didn't show up for the spring game. But come the fall, I mean, there's always the chance. And I mean, of course, injuries happen. I don't wish that on anybody. Right. But, you know, say he does wind up on the field this year, then Vandergrift, isn't that his name?
Vandergrift, I think is what it is.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I've only tomato.
I mean, those guys, you know, they're just committed. They're not signed. They're not
right
for sure coming. So I want to say, though, that Lincoln Riley does nothing but win. The dude just comes out and he has been killing it.
And not only win, produce Heisman winning quarterbacks and number one overall picks.
Yeah.
So if you're a quarterback prospect,
why wouldn't you want to go there? Yeah.
Absolutely. You still have to look at it as, am I going to get on the field? But, you know, and that I think that we're about to see that first time question mark. So,
I mean, like for Georgia, if they're going after the five-star running backs, they can say, you can come to this school and look at our history. Look at the running backs that have come through this program. Oklahoma can say, at least for the past, you know, couple years now, look at what we do with quarterbacks. Oh. And then you got the teams like Ohio State and Bama just be like, hey, look, it doesn't matter what position you play. You come here and you have a very good shot of being drafted. So,
and the part that stinks with the quarterback position versus, like you said, the running backs for Georgia – like, we knew who DeAndre Swift was as a freshman because he got a decent workload, even with Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. We're not going to have a Florida Chris Leak, Tim Tebow situation or an Ohio State, JT Barrett, Cardale Jones type of situation. We don't see those work. And that's the stinky part, for lack of a better term, that happens with the quarterback position, to where could you imagine if you had a running quarterback like Jalen Hurts and then you had Spencer Rattler in his arm? I mean, you wouldn't know what to do with Oklahoma. I mean, you already don't know what to do. But, I mean, it would just add a bigger question mark to where when you're prepping for them during the week, you're a defensive coordinator, you sit down and you look down and you're like, well, what the hell are we supposed to do?
It makes
sense. Yep. So, well, guys, we've been going for a little bit over an hour now, so we're going to hop off here. That was a fantastic Devy conversation. I want to thank Andrew so much for his Devy knowledge. Again, find him on Twitter at @mandrewNFL. You can find his articles on dynastyhappyhour.com. Most of them, if not all of them, are Devy related. If this interests you at all, feel free to reach out to him. He loves to talk this stuff. He will help you start to go down this path of Devy. It's another deep, deep hole, but it just seems, you know, I was just listening to somebody the other day. It was the dummies. They were talking about chasing that first high, the first dynasty league. And I think after you play dynasty for a couple of years, Devy's a great step to take because it's just another fix to help chase that high you got with that first Devy or dynasty league. So, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on surviving a full year of Tyler harassing you about articles and things. Hope there's many more years to come.
I don't know, Tyler, I should be congratulating on surviving. More so Jacob, I should be congratulating on surviving.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. I'll tell you what, if you are ever thinking of trying to write articles and you want to get with a website, our group of writers on Twitter, it's a fun time. It's a fun time. Sometimes they get a little too involved for me and I have to shut the notifications off for a couple hours. But man, there's some funny stuff that goes on in there. That's for sure. It's a good group, caring group, but a very knowledgeable and fun group as well. So, Justin, it's been great talking to you again. Hopefully, at least one of these guys can come back and join us one of these days, Justin.
Absolutely. But, hey, and definitely throw out there that the Dynasty Happy Hour, there's Devy Ranks that Andrew does, as well as several other people, and of course the Devy Happy Hour. They've got their own Devy podcast that I believe is it on the same feed?
Or it's on the same feed. If you are a subscriber to this podcast, I'm sure you've seen them come across. So don't just delete it because it has like a different title or something. Like, these guys are spitting this Devy knowledge out there and they do a fantastic job of it. And they bust each other's balls in the process.
And that's what I was going to say, is you get to hear me roast Dwight for being a Michigan State fan. And you get to hear Dwight roast me for grazing the ground that Tim Tebow walks on. And then we just added in our last episode, Commissioner McGriff, Matt.
Yep.
He's our third wheel, but he's a very functional. We're like those three-wheeled motorcycles to where we all kind of work perfect together. Everyone that rides a motorcycle or Harleys now is like, oh, just lost the podcast. but no, and I keep telling Matt, he's our Joe Rogan to where he's the outdoor guy. He's going to come across the most intelligent out of the three of us. I've just accepted it to where Matt's just fantastic the whole way around.
I think all three of you guys were fantastic all the way around. I love the podcast. I love listening because you guys spit out some names that I haven't heard of, and it's just another guy. I'll jot it down in my notes on my phone real quick. And then the next time I have a couple free moments, but hey, who was that guy we're talking about? And I'll go look him up. I just expand my own player database. So I appreciate it very much. You guys should all listen to him as well. For everybody here at Dynasty Happy Hour, thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
That's all the time we have for Dynasty Happy Hour. If you're looking for more fantasy football advice, be sure and follow the guys on Twitter. Doug at DaFantasyFather, Tim at DHH_Tim, Tyler at DHH_Tyler. Check out DynastyHappyHour.com for rankings, articles, ADP, shirts, and so much more. Need a question answered on the show? Hit the guys up on Twitter at DynastyHHPod, on the contact link on the site, or by email. DHH at DynastyHappyHour.com. Music is brought to you by the Fantasy Hitman, Mike Wright. We'll catch you back here next time for the Dynasty Happy Hour.